We're back, and what we do have right now is we should have on our computer, on our phone lines to discuss the issue of Gaza with us is Sandra Roush. And Sandra is the Canadian coordinator of Gaza Freedom March. She's an activist and a humanitarian who has considerable experience in Gaza-related issues. She's been there twice, and we actually spoke with her about one of her visits a few months ago. Let's see if we have her on the line. Sandra, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, wonderful. Worked on the first try. That's great.
That's good.
Well, you know, you never know what the phone lines here. We interviewed a gentleman from Belgium yesterday, and we're putting it on today, but it's a bit more faint in terms of quality when you're interviewing someone from Belgium as compared to Toronto. So there you are. But in any case, I want to thank you very much for being here with us today. We enjoyed speaking with you very much last time, and it is a rather somber occasion, a somber topic, unfortunately, because that is the conflict in Gaza that occurred last year, circa December. And, you know, we had a number of events here in Hamilton. If memory serves, we had about five or more events here in the city of Hamilton. We had a meeting at a mosque of about 500 people to plan a large demonstration downtown. That was hundreds and hundreds of people filling up Gore Park. And there were a number of other, you know, pickets and demonstrations, letter writing campaigns, media campaigns, outreach. I mean, there was a lot, I mean, because of that violence, there was a lot of interest in making sure that attention was being paid to the plight of the civilians that were suffering under this bombardment. So it was a really big issue at this time last year. I mean, just for our guests and people that are refreshing themselves on this idea, can you tell us what your perspective is on the events that were that would characterize that conflict that happened in December?
Well, last December, when Israel started attacking Gaza, just massacring the people, in the end, more than 1,400 people killed. That was the time when myself and seven other Jewish women occupied the Israeli consulate, and we were arrested. And one of the things that I remember that day, we were being we were inside the consulate, refusing to leave. We saw the CNN was on the television inside the consulate, and the numbers of the people that were being killed was increasing in front of our eyes, and I never could imagine that a country could trap 1.5 million people inside a small area like Gaza with no place to go, living under siege with all their gates locked and closed, the largest outdoor prison in the world, and then start bombing them. I mean, how can we wrap our minds around something like that?
Yes.
How can we even imagine it?
Yes, and I understood it affected you greatly. And we actually interviewed you and discussed that sit-in as well, the seven or Jewish women who were involved in that. That made the news in our corporate media as well as the independent media. You'd see it on rabble.ca and others, you know, websites spreading the news around about that very courageous sit-in. And we do remember that, and we very much appreciate your actions. And I think you were really responding to a crisis as you saw it and as we all saw it. So I guess the question now is, it's 1 year later, and you saw the media attention that was being given to that conflict a year ago.
Yeah,
and the conflict, the attention that was being given to it by activists. So what about today? Do you feel that this is being remembered sufficiently? Is there coverage that you can comment on, or do you feel that there's a lack of coverage? How are you seeing the treatment of this issue?
You know, and I know, that there's a lack of coverage. It isn't that we have forgotten Gaza, but it is very difficult to get a story into the mainstream media. It sometimes feels impossible. And you know, the people in Gaza feel as if they're isolated and if nobody is looking and if nobody cares. And, you know, usually if there's some kind of massacre like what happened in Gaza, then the world community comes together and starts to rebuild. Gazans continue to live under siege with nothing being able to get in. So, you know, what I saw in March, I saw again in May, and it's still there. The buildings are gone. The homes are gone. People are living in tents. Families are living in tents. Mothers are nursing little babies while they live in a tent. Last January, the tents were flooding from the rain. In the summer, the tents were dry and dusty with snakes everywhere. And then as the summer increased and the tents got drier and drier, they started cracking. Now the people, the families are still living in those tents, and it's winter again. It's winter again, and the rains are going to come again. And this is how they're going to live. Cement gets in, so there's not enough windows. What are we doing?
I mean, this is absolutely incredible because we know the one-sided stance that our own government has taken on this issue. And the way you're describing it, it sounds as if Gaza was basically a giant refugee camp prior to the bombing last year. So now it's like it's been a refugee camp that's been bombed and attacked, and the provision of services is even more limited than it was prior to that. So now I understand there's actions to draw attention to this crisis. This is like an ongoing crisis, I suppose, that is punctuated sometimes by bombing and assault, but is generally a long-standing humanitarian issue. So there is this Gaza Freedom March, and I understand there's activities that are happening in Canada and also activities that are happening abroad. So are these activities all interrelated?
Yeah, let's talk about Gaza Freedom March. It's an international movement, and we've been working on it for several months, getting ready to go from December 27th to January 2nd and to march in Gaza with more than 50,000 Gazans on December 31st. So now, with our vision of 500 people, we have 1,400 internationals going to Gaza to march on December 31st. We have over 55 Canadians registered, paid, ready to go, and making preparations now. And we have events going on in cities around the world. And we have our own Gaza Freedom March in Toronto on December 27th. There is a march in London, Ontario, on January 1st. We have events happening in Calgary, in Vancouver, hopefully in Ottawa, and events planned for Montreal. So that's what Canadians are doing to draw attention. We expect in Toronto to have more than 1,000 people on the street on December 27th. And it's a short drive from Hamilton. So,
well, that's incredible. I mean, if you get anything like those numbers, it shows that people do remember. And they
people remember. Why isn't it in the media?
Well, you know, I mean, you've got this international component of it, too, with people going to Gaza, the 55 Canadians. And what concerns me is how would this march be allowed to occur? Because wouldn't you have to get these 1,400 activists through borders and such, especially are you going through Egypt or are you going through Israeli borders? Is there a plan, a concerted effort to get people through these borders, or is it just sort of more independent?
Well, as you know, Code Pink, we've had quite a bit of success this year getting our delegations into Gaza for short periods of time, but we have been successful negotiating with the Egyptian government. We have set up a type of a protocol, something that's been working. So for months now, the organizers of Gaza Freedom March have been working closely with the Egyptian government, and we have now presented the 1,400 names to them that'll have to go through the security clearance. And we do believe that our delegation will enter through the Rafah border with a date that they all have to be out. There will be rules. We know that we can't be certain that this is going to happen, but, you know, we hope so. And we believe that it'll happen. And they will march from the outskirts of the Gaza City to the Erez border, which is the border with Israel. And inside of Israel, we know that Palestinians and internationals and Jewish activists, Israeli Jewish activists, will march down to Eretz. But there's a wall in between, and as well there is no man's land on either side, so it's unlikely that the two groups will be able to meet.
Well, it's a noble effort. However you get in, and however many people, and whatever meetings take place, I think people can appreciate the heart that has gone into this. In terms of the Toronto event, this is December 27th, and I'm just wondering, for people coming in from Hamilton, have they set a time for that in Toronto yet?
Yeah, it's 1:00, and that's in front of the Israeli consulate. That's where we'll start at 1, which is at 180 Bloor Street West. And we'll march from there across. The intention is to move across Bloor and down Yonge Street.
I see. In the last few months, we've been covering a lot of issues related to Israel, related to Palestine, related to Gaza, especially human rights, humanitarian issues, the suffering of children. We've interviewed medical professionals. We've interviewed NGOs from Scotland here on the program. And I'm just wondering, in terms of your activism and your experience with the media and in the community, do you sense that there's been any sort of change in opinion or change in perspective as a result of this bombing, and in particular, people's opinion of the actions, particularly the military actions of the Israeli government? I know that we speculated a year ago that perceptions in the world across the world would be changing as a result of the bombing, and potentially in Canada as well. And with all of this activism from labor unions now, from activists like anti-war organizations, and now Jewish organizations as well, do you think that has helped put new ideas, I guess, or help bring some of these ideas to the Canadian public at large?
I want to say, yes, everybody understands. Yes, it's all good. It's hard to say that. It's hard to say it when, it's really hard to get a story into the media. But, yes, I do believe that more and more people are gradually beginning to understand that everything Israel does has not been right, not good. And, Jews like myself and others in organizations like Independent Jewish Voices and Not in Our Name and the International Zionist Movement, Anti-Zionist Movement, we are trying to say, we're trying to show the difference between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. Speaking out against Israel, speaking out against Zionism is not anti-Semitism. And, feeling guilt about what happened during the Holocaust, it's time for us to get together and heal the memory of the Holocaust. And so this is gradual. This is hard. But, I think that definitely there is a difference. Definitely there is more of the mainstream population that is willing to speak out, willing to listen, and is seeing that Palestine deserves a just peace.
Well, I think in my experience, that opinion is something that I guess I could relate to, because some of these issues that we're talking about now, some of these human rights issues, mm-hmm. are things that just have been more difficult to discuss as a mainstream issue just 2 or 3 years ago. And I think people that had not even really paid attention or clued into the Israel-Palestine conflict were started to pay attention after that bombing and started to have to form opinions on it. And, of course, there's been more activism on that basis, too. So I think people have been exposed to more ideas. And I know it's an uphill battle. It can seem like a slog at times, and the media can seem non-receptive, non-responsive. But I think that there really has been progress made. And, I mean, it's not just me. Perhaps not just both of us. I've seen positive discussion of this in a number of activist groups. So it's because of the work of people such as yourself that there has been this slow change in opinion. And perhaps that is what has motivated Prime Minister Harper to come up with some of those new law proposals. What did they have? They wanted to make it so that if criticism of Israel, they wanted to equate that directly to anti-Semitism, if I recall.
Yes.
So
yes.
I mean, you now have a state effort. They're starting to intervene because I guess the public opinion is changing, society's opinion is changing on this, and because you have a conservative government in power that is very pro-Israel, basically. We've been saying for some time that it's been taking a one-sided stance on this issue. It looks now that they're having to butt heads against their own electorate.
Well, were you aware of the letter that was sent out to the general population in Toronto, I know, from the Conservative Party, saying we are much more supportive of Israel and the Jewish community than the Liberals? I mean, how crazier can our government get? So we need to really concentrate on bringing in a new government. But I mean, when we think that the people of Gaza have been living under siege for, over 3 years now, and when we think that Israel has banned such ordinary items as jam and tea and pasta and anything else you can think of, you have to realize that this is just to make their life uncomfortable. And now the talk that the U.S. government will fund an underground wall between Egypt and Gaza.
And how do you justify that? How do you say that's a humanitarian thing? You know, how does it help people in Gaza to further build walls, further the divisions and separations between Gaza and the rest of the world?
I don't know, and it is time. It's time for the average person to speak out and say that I will not allow this to happen because I know now, and if I know, then I have to make a difference. So I will say to everybody who's listening and everybody who will listen to me anywhere and to any of us that are part of the Gaza Freedom March, go to our website, GazaFreedomMarch.ca, endorse the march. We're up to 6,000 names at this time. We have some very famous people around the world, Canadians and Americans, Europeans, etc., that are endorsing the march. Be part of this.
Yes, wonderful.
You know, let's get 50,000 names. Maybe 50,000 names will make our government leaders stand up and listen.
Well, thank you so much for bringing up this information about this wonderful march that's taking place, because I haven't received a deluge of emails about this particular march yet, so we're still learning about that. So that means it's time for us who are listening and those of us who have email accounts, email our friends about these issues, to start getting that information out there, getting it out to our friends, activists we know, and into the community. I've been hearing a lot about the Galloway legal defense and other things, which are very interesting and some things that I want to support. But it's time now to let people know in Hamilton, who might not have not known about it previously, about this Gaza Freedom March. So I'll be attaching that to emails to people I know. And again, you can reach it at the website. Is that GazaFreedomMarch.ca? Is that?
Yes.
GazaFreedomMarch.ca. So in case you forget any of the information, you can get it right from there. Oh, okay, great. Okay. Well, Sandra, thanks for taking time out for this. This is wonderful, and I'm glad we could bring you, in a way, to Hamilton on this issue and get it out to people. So, I mean, you've made me think about it more, and I mean, your enthusiasm is kind of trickling and bleeding over here, so that's a good thing. So, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much, Sandra. And you take care, and best of luck on that. I will get the word out to people in Hamilton.
Okay. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Sandra Rooch, and she is a Canadian coordinator of the Gaza Freedom March. She is an activist and a humanitarian with considerable experience in this issue, having visited Gaza twice as part of numerous delegations, and she continues to organize heavily on this issue. So we thank her very much for being on our program today.